Thank you, folks, for joining us today. And we have two Duncan Aviation guests with us, and we're going to continue to roll on with our core values. And the core value we'll be focusing on today is focus on solutions and offer positive suggestions. So today we have Ryan Huss, our sales director here in Lincoln. We have Casey Harwick, our vice president of maintenance here in Lincoln. So I'm going to allow these two guys to go ahead and introduce themselves. And Ryan, do you want to start us off?
Yeah, I'm Ryan Huss. I'm the director of sales for Duncan Aviation. I've been at Duncan now for 20 years, and I grew up, I should say, came from the airframe department. I started at Duncan as an airframe technician one, worked up to a team leader on the Challenger airframe teams. Did that for about 5 years before moving up to sales. And then I was a Bombardier sales rep for roughly 5 years again before moving into the role of sales manager, and then recently into the role of director of sales. Prior to Duncan, I did 7.5 years in the U.S. Air Force. I was an airborne crew chief there. I flew almost 1,200 total hours in support of presidential support missions and the alert mission. So that kind of prepared me for Duncan, and you know, the experience there, I think, helped me grow up and grow into who I am now. So
nice. That is cool stuff. I didn't know you were a part of the military and had that background.
Yep, I did, like I said, 7.5 years on the E-4s. So it's a fun job.
Absolutely. Casey, what about you, man? What have you been up to? Did you just start last week or last
yeah,
year?
Yeah, some would think that. I actually started Duncan 20 years ago in our interior shop. Spent a little bit of time there completing brand new Astra aircraft, and they're coming over from Israel, the SPX projects. And I moved over to our fuel team in airframe. Spent about a year and a half working Lear 35s and all the other Falcon tank and planks. And then I joined the same team as Ryan Huss. Ryan and I worked together for, I don't know, what it was, 5 years?
Yep.
5 years we were together. He went off and had his own team, and I continued on the Bombardier team and soon became a team leader in our NetJets program. Worked there for a couple of years, became a project manager, and then the program manager for NetJets, followed by airframe manager here in Lincoln. Moved to Battle Creek to become director of maintenance in that facility for a couple of years, and then came back down to Lincoln as vice president of maintenance. So a lot of different jobs, and that's been a fun part about Duncan is the experiences I've been able to chalk up to all the years of being here and the mobility of learning our business. Prior to Duncan, I was out of high school. I actually worked at a aircraft refueling hose manufacturing plant before coming to Duncan, but then I moved down here to go to UNL and work at Duncan Aviation.
Yeah, Casey's got a really broad sense of the company because he's been in a lot of different departments, and that gives him a unique perspective that I think a lot of people don't have within Duncan.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you anymore too. And I mean, gosh, NDT, I know you have your NDT certification, I know you mm-hmm. have your AMP, and you worked in the interior shop. It's like mm-hmm. some people are going to start wondering what you can't do, so it's pretty awesome.
There's man. That jack of all trades but master of none, I think is what it is.
That's probably it. Uh-huh. Oh, that's cool. Well, great. Thanks for introducing you guys, of course. And you probably all know me already from listening to the podcast, but I'm Harrison Duncan. And yeah, great to have everyone in today. So, and let's get to this this core value here, of course. So first thing I'd ask you guys, how do we go about troubleshooting and finding the solution to a problem in the areas that you guys are involved with?
Yeah. Typically, troubleshooting is kind of a universal skill set. No matter what the problem is, you need to identify really what the problem is. A lot of times you're confronted with half-truths or half the story, and you got to dig in to really figure out what the actual issue is. From there, then, you actually have to look, see all the things that may be a cause of the fault. So you'll line up all those issues, all those problems, then kind of prioritize them in order of magnitude of what's the easiest, simplest way to address it, going all the way down to the more obscure, out there type of thought. And where we see a lot of issues is when people actually start at the very bottom of the list, where it's the way out there thinking, the problem that has never been solved before, where it might be something as simple as having a ground disconnected. And it's easy to translate that into problems within the shop, where it may be as simple as sitting two team members down and having a direct conversation with those two if there's those type of issues.
Yeah, in the sales world, you know, the troubleshooting is a little bit different, but like Casey said, it's kind of the same process. I mean, the same thing we did as team leaders and technicians on the floor, we still do it. It's just with a different set of issues. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for me in sales, a lot of times it'll be, you know, making sure we keep the hangers full or pricing or something to that effect. And a lot of that has to do with looking at the, you know, the opportunities that are out there and determining which ones to go after and how to go after them, where to price them. You know, so sales tends to be pretty fluid. I like to say sometimes we operate a little bit in the gray as far as we're not an overly structured group in the way that we operate sometimes. Not to say we do anything shady, but we have to be fluid in some of our decision making and how we look at things. So
when it comes to finding a solution, when do you guys as senior team members, because you're both part of that group, when do you decide it's time to really step in?
Yeah, for me in the sales side, I try and let these guys run their particular models and their particular usage of labor on their own. I'm not, I don't micromanage that portion of it. I tell them it's their own business, if you will, and let them do their best to keep the hours sold and keep it profitable. Where I start to step in is when we start to forecast out and I start seeing that there's pockets coming where we may not have the manpower, or we may not have the opportunities. That's when I will help direct and help control some creativity of how we go after some things. And there's no secret sauce. It's always a little bit different, but you know, for the most part, the teams do pretty well. The intervention that we require is, you know, maybe 10% of the job. So we're fortunate in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same situation in the production side, where it's really giving the team members enough space to make the decisions themselves and figure out the solutions on their own. But really when I intervene is when they start going down the obscure path or a rabbit hole where it looks like they won't be able to solve that issue, and kind of bring them back on to fault isolation, basically, is get them back into here are the things that we should be focusing on versus that obscure thought or abstract thought.
Sure. You know, and just thinking about that too, I feel like it matters where you work, of course. You know, we work in different areas, but really we're all connected in a way. We all have to do this. We all have to, you know, go back and try to find that solution. We all have to know when to step in and when to let someone else, you know, or let the person kind of figure it out. And that's how we all grow, I think, too.
That's exactly. That's the best way to grow, is actually learning and at times making mistakes, and that's okay to make mistakes, but being able to figure out how to recover from that mistake. And that's the big piece of being in these leadership pieces, whether it's the senior team or management, is not micromanaging your team, because you're never going to develop them. You're only going to have your thumb over the top of them, which doesn't actually promote growth.
You always want to be there to support the team, always, because they always have the questions, and most of the time they know the answer to the questions, but they're not ready to pull the trigger on their own. So, mm-hmm. You know, some of that question-based leadership type stuff where, you know, you can ask them what they think we should do, and that they will frequently know the right answer.
Yep.
You just need to reinforce and affirm it with them that, yep, that's the way we need to go. Let's let's move in that direction.
Even between us, you know, just talking it out. Maybe not even looking for Ryan to solve the issue for me. It's just talking it through. And as you talk it out with him, you come to your own conclusion.
Sometimes you just need to say stuff aloud to someone, you know, whether it's here at work or it's at home or whatever it may be. You know, it's good to get some, like you said, some reaffirmation that, you know, hey, this is the right move. Mm-hmm. So. Well, cool. Well, what about, you know, when you're working on a project and something unexpected happens, and how do you go about handling that challenge of, you know, really getting things back to where you need to?
Yeah. I think for me, it's always knowing what your end goal is, and from there backing into what you call critical milestones. And it's aviation. It's the only expected part of aviation is that the unexpected will happen. So folks can go down a dark path of micro planning out every event, but it's good to at least know that there's four or five crucibles that need to be hit in any project you're doing, whether it's an aircraft project or just a project you're doing with team members. And then you know which ones need to be addressed right then and there. And if something unexpected happens, you can reevaluate and reorganize that flow to make sure that you do hit your end goal.
Sure. Yeah, and when you're reevaluating, I think you lay down that path you want to go, and I think you need to be pretty intentional when you look at it. You know, I think one of the worst things we can do as leaders would be to find a problem and give kind of a partial answer or a gray answer on which direction we want to move. Mm-hmm. We as leaders need to be pretty intentional about this is the course we want to follow. You know, we're not going to be there to make every decision for people, but when it comes to something that's critical or we need a solution, that's where we step in and really kind of focus the effort and drive in one direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's equally as important that if you realize the direction you were pointed towards is not right, to be able to stop it. And then instead of continuing down, knowing in the back of your mind this may not be where it takes us, that you're able to stop it and admit we need to change direction.
Yeah, you're always looking for unintended consequences. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something that we have to watch for. You know, even when it comes to winning a job that we know that you know we may create ripples if we do it, we may have to be very careful how we tread sometimes. And you know, the same with the airframe side, they may have a customer call them to go support them, and not everything is going to work. You know, they don't want to go into Bombardier necessarily and try and support a customer right in Bombardier's hangar, because obviously, they would like to do that themselves. So, it's some of the challenges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, of course. I one of my favorite football coaches, and I won't share his name, but he coaches in the NFL. And he was asked after the game, they had a bad game, they didn't play very well, and there was a bad penalty during the game. And they said, you know, what did you think of that penalty? And he says, well, I was thinking about the next play. Mm-hmm. So I think that rings true in our organization. You know, we need to. You know, it's great to look back and try to understand why we went a certain route or why we did this or that. Mm-hmm. But really, it's just always better to just look forward and learn from those mistakes.
Yeah, there's a time to reflect after you've cleared the hurdle. You know, you can always look back and determine, you know, how we got there. But the first thing you need to do is be forward focused.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. No, that's good stuff, too. And so last but not least, but why is it so important that we continue to be solution-oriented at Duncan Aviation? And why is it so important to keep moving forward rather than focus on something that's really negative and it kind of drags us down? And, you know, we kind of mentioned that already, but is there anything else that you guys can think of really off the top of your heads where, you know, maybe we really dug into something that was really too deep? And
well, we're a solution-oriented business. Customers come to us because we find the best solutions for their aircraft and for their mission. You know, so we're constantly evolving how we look at projects, how we look at product offerings. We're always forward-focused, trying to visit what is the next new thing, what is the item that could change our industry in some degree. Because there's always innovation going on. It's now whether it's good or bad is the next question, and that's what we need to establish if it's going to be relevant to our customers and something that they would benefit from. Then that would be a forward focused item that we would probably push to the front and try and educate people. You know, I look back at ADSB and Duncan Aviation. I would say by far led the industry in communicating the need for ADS-B coming and the mandates and, you know, get compliant. I mean, we had the whole countdown clock and, you know, what percentage of the fleet is completed. And, you know, I think that education and that forward-focused look was imperative to helping the industry meet the deadline for the most part. I mean, I think pretty much everybody that wanted to do that ADSB, they got her done. So,
No, I couldn't agree more. And it just proves, again, what we said earlier, how everything's all connected. If marketing hadn't had the countdown, if they didn't have the marketing initiatives out there for everyone to know how important this was, if sales didn't sell the items, if they didn't go after the customers that need it, and then if our group didn't install it properly, and we did all those things. And so we really pushed really hard for that stuff.
It was a full top-down effort. I mean, I know the Duncan family, Aaron, Jeff, they all realized what it was going to cause if we didn't get, you know, the mandates in place and get everything completed. It was going to be very negative for the industry. So that was a real recent area where, that we, I think, did well in.
Yeah. Great. Focusing on the negative really really gains, there's no gains from it. You exhaust a lot of energy looking back at things that may have happened, potentially have negative consequences, but you know, being solution oriented, it's one of the best things we are. And we always challenge my team, at least, is you want to play checkers, you want to play chess. And you know, for us, it's definitely a chess match where you want to be 2 to 3 steps ahead of that move you're making to hopefully identify the consequences of that move, but then also how's it going to be countered. And that's one of the things I love working this company is that at Duncan, it's the entire team, and we can draw from so many different resources to get a fresh perspective on a problem we're having. There's a lot of smart folks around here that, and they may not be in the area you're thinking of, or you can come in and get their opinion on a matter and take it in a totally different direction. And what seemed like a negative outcome may turn into a complete positive.
Yeah, that's true. I was reading an article the other day about JetBlue, one of the smaller airlines, but nevertheless a good airline, and they like to call their passengers, which most, you know, airlines, they call them passengers, the folks flying on the aircraft, they call them customers instead. And they think that's very different than, if you think about it, really, being a customer versus a passenger, I think I'd rather be a customer. And so when I think about what we call our, some people just call them employees. I try my very best, I know a lot of us do, to call everyone team members because we're all a team. We're all members of the team. And so, yeah, I think that's just, it's really important and proves what you guys both said. So,
well, yeah, I think that's how we should all view. Even our coworkers are our customers. You know, in sales, Casey's team is my customer, no different than the customer external who has the aircraft. I have to deliver them a good product, Casey's team, that is, in order to in order for them to be successful, which in turn helps me to be successful with external customers. And it is a circle of life, if you will. It kind of goes around and around.
Mm-hmm. And that team extends out even from our hangars to our customers when they're part of it. That's what you watch some of our extremely successful, complicated projects. The level of engagement from our customers is what helped push that along back to the milestones, the projects that may go off track. If our customers are heavily involved with the decision process and willing to be solution-oriented, it helps bring that thing back to delivering it on time as we originally agreed upon.
It's a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
Of course. So let's get to our finale question, the one we've been asking quite a bit. And Ryan, you live kind of in between Omaha and Lincoln. You live out in Gretna. And Casey, you live 5-10, really close, really close here in Lincoln. So
yeah.
Don't go looking for his house, though. So, well, fellas, what are your favorite places to go here in town, you know, on the weekends with your free time, with your families? What do you like to do on the weekends, and do you have a favorite restaurant?
Well, I guess I'll start with the obvious. I mean, Lincoln, Nebraska during football season is a pretty unique experience. You know, downtown down there is just a very fun environment. Customers enjoy it. I mean, myself, you know, I've been going to Husker games for many, many years. So that part of it kind of speaks for itself. And really the whole downtown district has kind of revolutionized over the last 5 to 7 years with the hotels and the restaurants and the nightlife scene down there. It's a much different place than it was 15 years ago, for sure. As far as restaurants, you can find a good steak in about 15 different places down there. So I'm not going to name one, probably. I'll just say a good piece of beef is pretty easy to find here.
You bet. And And it's always reasonable, I would say, too. I mean, it's not – you can get that really expensive steak, but it'll still, compared to other areas, it's still fair. So that's very true.
And don't forget all the sushi restaurants we have now, too.
Yeah. I've had several customers from the East Coast comment how we have some of the best sushi in the States.
Yeah. I'm a big Hero 88 fan, so there's one restaurant for you.
There you go. Boom. I went there like a couple weeks ago. The place is great.
It's pretty good.
For me, it's pretty easy. I'll kind of narrow down my neighborhood that Harrison won't say, but Toast is always a good one to go down to. I mean, it's within walking distance of my house. It's a great family-owned operation here based out of Lincoln. But also, a little shout-out to Bonwich on 27th Street. If you guys are ever out and about and you want a good little sandwich, go down there. Yeah, Bon Me, they do a good job down there. Back to what Ryan said, there's some energy around Lincoln, Nebraska when the community gets together. It's not just for the football games, but it might be the farmer's market in the summer. I'm not a person who likes crowded areas, but I'm a person that likes a crowd in Nebraska, in Lincoln, Nebraska. There's a lot of good folks that come out, and I love to be a part of anything, whether it's going to the volleyball games, whether it's going to the farmer's market. A football game is the obvious choice, but there's a lot of fun things to do, unless it's dead of winter here. So,
yeah, which it's heating up. Yeah, absolutely. So,
yeah, the town is pretty engaged in all of its youth sports, or not youth, it's college sports. Baseball. I mean, baseball in the summer is a late spring, summertime.
How lucky are we that the College World Series are only, 55 miles away from us every year? You get to go down and see that. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of unique things that come through this area.
Yeah, that's a good time, too. And it's great baseball. Those are great teams, and it's close by. And Bonwich, like you said, that's one of my favorite places. It's a Vietnamese sandwich, so it's a little different, but different is sometimes very, very good. So, and that's all we have today, folks. Thank you again for listening. Ryan, Casey, thank you both so much for joining us. This was a lot of fun. So, and once again, folks, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for podcasts, please reach out to straighttalk@duncanaviation.com.